That's a new feature of Zoom. It comes on and tells you that the meeting is being recorded. It's good to see everyone tonight. My topic tonight was motivated by some recent events that I'll get into, but what that recent event brought to mind for me was a text by our third Chinese Zen ancestor. So you know we have Bodhidharma, who's the first, and then we have Ekka, his disciple, and then we have this fellow called Sengsan, or in Sino-Japanese, Kanchi Sōsan. And some of us have been chanting the list of the Buddhas and ancestors on Thursday morning. So we run across this name, Kanchi Sōsan. And not very much is known about this person, this teacher, but he's famous for having attributed to him a Dharma poem called in Chinese called Xin Xin Ming. And that poem is translated, the title of the poem is translated as trusting in mind, or faith in mind, or relying on mind. So the title of the poem is kind of in the spirit of the quote from Okamura Roshi that Dora Lee read at the beginning of Zazen. Maybe that the spirit of that poem is just trust in your own mind. Just trust in the experience that's rising right now and study it. Apparently Kanchi Sōsan did that, and he studied his experience that was arising in his life in the beginning of the 7th century, and this is what he came up with. So I'm just going to read the first few lines, very famous first few lines of this poem, famous anyway in Zen circles. The great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. When love and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. If you wish to see the truth, then hold no opinion for or against. The struggle of what one likes and what one dislikes is the disease of the mind. Sometimes the first line of that poem is translated, the way is not difficult for those who don't pick and choose. Here it says, who have no preferences. So this is a teaching for us who are deeply immersed in picking and choosing, deeply immersed in actually a whole world, a whole social construct, a whole mental construct that's largely based on picking and choosing, or built on the back of picking and choosing. So This is a teaching for us. It's a teaching for those who have the habit of imposing their preferences on their experience, who see their experience through the lens of I like and I don't like. So this is pretty much all of us, right? This is pretty much all of us much of the time, seeing through those lenses. But the poem is there to remind us that there is another possibility, another way to see, another choice we can make. And the choice we can make is to practice choiceless awareness, choiceless sitting. We could practice Zazen. We could practice the way of no preference, the way of not picking and choosing, at least some of the time. We could orient ourselves. We could orient ourselves in that direction, and orienting ourselves in that direction is a cure, is an antidote for this, as Kanchi Sosan describes it, disease of the mind. But as I said, you know, we're deeply rooted. We have deep mental habits of picking and choosing. I've said this many times, but in Sanskrit, the word for consciousness is vijnana, and it means to cut or to divide, to discriminate, to pick and choose, essentially. And that's how consciousness is actually, identified in Buddhist teaching, as that faculty we have, you know, to pick and choose, to discriminate. So from the perspective of such a mind that is oriented that way, that is built that way, and that has built a social construct out of that faculty, it's really very difficult to imagine how you could give that up and what would happen if you did. And I think there's a tendency to think that if we actually gave up our deep habit of picking and choosing, then we would lose out. Other people would get everything they wanted from us, and we wouldn't get what we wanted. Because we'd leave the picking and choosing to everybody else, and we'd be kind of run over. So I think we have some fear about that. So because of that fear, maybe we cling to picking and choosing. And, you know, the Buddha said one of the causes of suffering is not to get what you want. So, you know, there's some basis for us to stick to our preferences, because we don't want to not get what we want. We want to get what we want. So I said there was a recent event that brought this topic to mind. And this recent event occurred at our wonderful multi-sangha Dharma Center. And I'm on several committees, excuse me. Oriented toward the improvement of the Dharma Center and for the direction of the Dharma Center and so forth. And so I go to some meetings, and I went to a meeting recently, and the whole point of the meeting, why everybody was to getting together, was to express their preferences, which is often the point of people getting together in meetings. And we were very focused in this meeting on picking and choosing. It was the point of the meeting. And I went to this meeting actually knowing that, well, I didn't know, but I had some evidence that the preference that I had for the outcome of the meeting was not going to be supported potentially by anybody else at the meeting. So I kind of went to the meeting with an air of resignation. I thought I would be putting my two cents in, but I didn't expect an outcome that would that I would call getting what I wanted. I wasn't expecting that outcome. But I had this air of resignation. It's okay. I'd kind of given up. I'd expressed my opinion a number of times, and it sort of, as you say, fallen on deaf ears. So, or not deaf ears, but it hadn't been received as something that other people wanted to embrace. So I didn't expect much out of this meeting, and I thought I was going to the meeting with a kind of neutrality, kind of, well, whatever, this decision's going to be get made, and it'll be, you know, what other people want, and I'll be okay with that. Well, that was wrong, because I went to the meeting and I found out almost immediately, that I wasn't okay. As soon as I got to the meeting, I felt my heart was pounding in my chest, and I felt like shallowness in my breathing, and I suddenly realized that, oh, I was fooling myself. I really had this preference, and I was really afraid of getting run over. You know, I was afraid of giving up my preference, and I was afraid of getting run over. And so, you know, fear was coming up in the advent of this meeting. And so it did turn out that I expressed my preference in the meeting, and other people expressed, and usually a lot of times, you know, in meetings, there's like a couple of people that have strong preference, and everybody sits, you know, back and kind of watches a kind of dynamic go. And that was somewhat what was going on. And I suppose you could say, it's kind of an effort to persuade, right? It's trying to get people to agree with you, and maybe another person trying to get people to agree with them. But of course, we're all practitioners of the Buddha way. So we are, you know, we are exercising mindfulness, and we are paying attention to, you know, I was certainly paying attention to my feelings, and I assume everybody else was paying attention to their feelings. And so, you know, we had a lively discussion, and as it turned out, at the end of the day, I actually did get some of what I preferred. I got an outcome that was not as completely not what I wanted as I thought it was going to be. There was a compromise. And as people supported the compromise, I noticed that my heart rate started to drop, my breath started to be easier, I started to calm down inside, you know. I was trying, as we often do, I think, even though when we were internally upset, you know, we try to project some composure, but, you know, and you, because you don't want to really, it doesn't go well if you just, sometimes if you just, you know, remove the veil and let out how you're truly feeling, you know, anyway, it doesn't work very well if you kind of stick very strongly to your preference and you're very vociferous about it. And I was really trying hard not to do that. But I found that, you know, I was pretty strong in my statements, I hope. But I left the meeting feeling like, I don't think I, you know, upset anybody. I don't think I was strong in my preferences, but I don't think I made a big mess, which I was happy about, because, you know, who wants to do that? So it occurred to me after this meeting that the experience I have had is a big reason why people do not want to join boards and committees and organizations, because they, you know, one of the tasks of boards and committees is to bring up various ideas, wrestle with them. They're often those ideas are competing, and there's this effort to bring up, you know, to work towards compromise. But in the course of that process, it can bring up, a lot of feelings. So I think there's a calculation that some people make that, you know, I'm not going to go in that situation, because in that situation, I'm going to have some feelings, and I don't want to have those feelings. I don't want to feel upset. I don't want to feel that I'm not getting what I want. I don't want to be afraid of getting run over by others. So, you know, you make that calculation and then you hold yourself back, and maybe that works. Maybe that works. Maybe there's something lost there too, because you lose that opportunity to engage with others and to be part of the decision. And then maybe what oftentimes happens is that people who weren't part of the decision and chose not to be part of the decision kind of grouse about the decision, you know. But, you know, there's real reasons why people hold themselves back. You know, they don't want to experience that kind of negativity. And I don't want to denigrate, you know, that, you know, people have a need for safety. They have a need, you know, to not suffer, not getting what they don't want, what they want. I understand that. I think my where I'm particularly where I come from is usually I think kind of strongly attached to my preferences and wanting to at least, you know, put them forward and at least put them out there. And, you know, I don't get everything I want, but I don't hold myself back because I want to be heard, you know. That's been where I come from. So in the Buddha's teaching, bringing this back to Dharma, you know, we have the teaching of five skandhas, the five aggregates that make up a human personality. And the second skanda is called feeling, or we say in the Heart Sutra, we say sensation, And, you know, the Buddha's approach to feeling and sensation is wonderfully reductive. He says there's only three kinds of feeling: pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. Only three kinds of sensation or feeling that we can have. So reviewing the practice that's suggested around sensation or feeling is to observe, to investigate, to observe the feelings that are arising, and know, is this a pleasant feeling? Is this an unpleasant feeling? Is this a neutral feeling? And stop there. Stop there. So we usually don't stop there. We often, if it's an unpleasant feeling, we want to run away. We want to get out of there. We want it to stop. We want that feeling to stop. And if it's a pleasant feeling, we want to have it continue. We want more of the pleasant feeling. So that's kind of being caught by sensation. Wanting more of the pleasant and wanting less of the unpleasant is kind of expressing a preference. So it's not exactly in line with the third ancestor's teaching. So, you know, again, maybe we're not willing to appear in situations where we expect unpleasant feelings to arise. And that's okay. There's no need to, like, you know, go into lion's den or something like that and feel the fear of being in proximity to a lion. My teacher used to have a story. He said, well, if he was in proximity to a lion, or I think he used to say a tiger, if he was in proximity to a tiger, he'd want to be in the trunk of a Volkswagen with the tiger. In other words, he'd really want to be close to this threat. You know, he'd really want to know he'd want to be really there with this force that was going to create great fear and potential harm. So, you know, this is, I think, the practice of the Buddha way is unpleasant feeling, or, you know, usually we don't have so much trouble with pleasant feeling. We don't have so much trouble with neutral feeling. But we have a lot of trouble with unpleasant feeling, unpleasant sensation. And we want to run away from it. We want to get away from it. So that's where we, you know, unpleasant sensation is really our teacher. And that's where we really need to study. That's where our mindfulness really gets tested. Can we be mindful and stay, you know, I'm in that meeting, you know, and it's really unpleasant feelings are arising. My heart's pounding and I, you know, my breath's all messed up. And there are situations like that. And that's kind of where that shows us where we need to work. But the work is simply just suffering, that experience. You know, there's a phrase in Sanskrit, Dukkha Dharma Jana Kashanti, and it means the patient suffering of painful dharmas. The patient suffering of painful dharmas. So this is the practice of the Buddha way. It's just patiently suffer unpleasant feeling. And you know, if you're able to do that, sometimes things will go better, actually, even though it's hard to do. So one other thing I've been studying recently is called the Brahmanette Sutra. And this is an old Mahayana Sutra, very ancient, before the rise of Zen in China, but it's written in China, but before really Zen is there, you know, before Zen is an identified school. And the Brahmanette Sutra has this line that really, this sutra is about the precepts. And it's valued in our school because it's the source of the 10 clear mind precepts that we receive whether priest or lay. Actually, we receive these precepts: not killing, not stealing, not misusing sexuality, and so forth. So in the Brahmanette Sutra, the way it's formulated is really the way it's formulated for us in Soto Zen. And so it goes back, you know, to the 5th century, actually, in China, which is kind of interesting. But there's this line in that sutra. Well, it's a very long sutra, but there's this one line. I'll just give you one line. And it's one line that really, really jumped out at me. And I thought was so meaningful. It's talking about, it's really, in this part of the sutra, it's extolling the virtue of the precepts, you know, extolling the virtues of what in this section of the sutra is called the Buddha nature precepts. And this line goes like this. It says, all those who have thoughts, consciousness, form, and mind, all of us, in other words, all those who have thoughts, consciousness, form, and mind, who have these feelings and these minds, are all encompassed by these Buddha nature precepts. All those who have thoughts, consciousness, form, and mind, who have these feelings and these minds, are all encompassed by these Buddha nature precepts. So for the purposes of this talk, we all have these feelings and these minds. We don't get to exchange the feelings we have and the minds we have for some other mind. Most of us don't get to do that. We have the thoughts and the feelings that we have. And the willingness, the 100% willingness to have the thoughts and feelings we have, to not run away from the thoughts and feelings we have, to not be afraid of the thoughts and feelings we have. That willingness, that kind of willingness, that kind of practice is the practice of the Buddha way. And it's the practice of not having preferences, not holding on to preferences, not holding on to picking and choosing, just being willing to have the feelings we have the thoughts we have. Experience what we're experiencing and say, this is my mind. These are my feelings. I accept and embrace them. They are, you know, what, how much truer can your experience be than the actual thoughts and feelings that you have? So I have this on now. I don't know how long I've gone on here. Oh, not too long, not too bad. This is my talk tonight, I think, and I'm curious what it brings up for you in terms of your experience and your encounter with, picking and choosing and situations where you're involved in interaction with others who have other feelings and thoughts. I see Larry's hand is up.
Well, Jim, that was, I really, really appreciated your talk tonight because I don't think there's a moment in my life that is not encompassed in some way by the subject of what you were talking about today. I mean, it thoroughly penetrates every moment of my life. And I would guess a couple of other people's too. As a matter of fact, just this evening as sitting, I had thoughts and feelings that were coming up. So, I mean, when is it not there? But I have this thought in my mind that the how we approach this is more so in our sitting practice than in our off-the-cushion practice, saying to ourselves, I'm going to stop having these preferences. I'm just going to observe and not be involved with them. So I don't know. Maybe it works for some people, but I think it's a slow process. And my last comment is, I didn't know that Reb grew up in Little Italy in New York with the mafia. When you shared the story of him being in the trunk of the Volkswagen with a tiger, being so close to that tiger, it reminded me of somewhere, I think it comes from the mafioso. Hold your friends close and hold your enemies closer. So that's all I have for this evening. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. So the wonderful venue for practicing not picking and choosing, the safe venue for practicing, is the cushion, and this is where we really get to in absence of any exterior influences that are upsetting, we just get to be upset by ourselves, or in our sitting, and then I think in our sitting, you know, this idea, we can really explore this idea of choiceless awareness and no preference awareness. And then we can explore the possibility of great space, you know, where angst or conflict that we're constantly involved with, we can actually see some of that drain and drop away, and So it shows us that possibility of dropping away our preferences, and then we can go out in meetings and all sorts of other interactions with friends and family, and we can see how our sitting helps us work with all situations. Dave, you have something.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting how things come together sometimes. We're having, for those of you, those of you who participated in the writing workshops last summer and had the opportunity to do the Beth Jacobs writing workshop, and she's coming back again. And in the meantime, I would say coincidentally, but I don't know that these things are coincidental. She has a workbook, a Buddhist journal, Guided Practices for Writers and Meditators, that I've been working through. And she has it's four sections, and one whole section is on the skandhas and on feelings and kind of delineating, triggers for these positive and negative and neutral feelings. And it's kind of interesting when things are all kind of written out in front of you, what triggers your feelings and such is really kind of, it gets you in touch with your feelings. I would recommend the workbook for anybody. It's helped with my practice anyway.
Oh, thank you, Dave. I'm happy to hear that. Richard?
I think Barry had his hand raised before me.
Okay, Barry. If you're not talking, could you mute? Because we're getting some static. Please mute until I call on you would be best.
Hey, Charles, you're up. So I was thinking of, when you're talking, I was thinking about my experience recently. I'm trying to lose some of the weight I gained over kind of the pandemic lately. So I'm kind of in a calorie deficit every day, which heightens my negative emotions pretty significantly. And so, things that normally would roll off my back pretty easily, I feel stronger about. And one of my neighbors said something that kind of, I thought was a very nice theory. I mean, it was, in retrospect, totally innocuous, but, it was kind of a not so nice thing to say. And it kind of bothered me. And I was driving and I thought I'm a Zen student. I'm just going to not let this bother me, of course that doesn't work, the analogy being when you're sitting in the sesshin and your knee starts to hurt, pretending it doesn't hurt doesn't work, concentrating on it too much, doesn't work either. But kind of what I just let myself do was just feel, the hurt that I was feeling. And, and it is true, it just processes through you quicker, it's just being a biological being, you're going to have preferences, sometimes I want to drink, sometimes I want to eat, want to get along with other members of my species. But I think it's, so I don't take what the third patriarch is saying, don't have literally preferences. I think it's more don't take away the target, and it comes back to the, not letting, don't try to pretend you don't care about something or want it a certain way. For me, it's more just let the feeling totally wash through me. And then I find that's kind of the gateless gate to escape that. And also, if I don't know if you're allowed to say, but I'm super curious what your meeting was about. I don't know if you guys can announce what that was about.
Well, I can say it was about trees. It was about what kind of trees and how many trees to be planted at the Dharma Center. So when when you come to the Dharma Center next, you'll see a place that has some new trees, and that was what the meeting was about. And you can decide for yourself whether there's too many trees, not enough trees, or they're the right kind of trees. But I do want to say I liked your talking about your diet, and then that making you potentially irritable. But then I was also thinking, when you were talking later, I was thinking the way you were talking about your mindfulness. I what occurred to me was your mindfulness is like a digestive aid. You know, it's a digestive aid that helps. It's like a probiotic. It helps you digest, as you were saying, it helps you digest the feelings more thoroughly and quicker when you apply your mindfulness. So I appreciated that your statement there.
Nice analogy, thank you.
Now, Richard.
Yes, let me bring down my hand. Yeah, Jim, when you were talking about preferences and being in meetings and trying to, you know, not have too strong of a preference, I thought about hanging out with some group of friends one summer. I guess this was, you know, pre-COVID now. We were doing one of these escape rooms, and we did an escape room, and then afterwards, you know, we were all asking each other, oh, what do you want to eat for dinner? And everyone says, oh, whatever you want to eat. What do you want? Oh, no, I go with whatever you want. And so six of us had no preferences. And we, you know, from there, we started naming ourselves Team Indecisive, because no one, you know, we kind of didn't want to impose our eating preferences on anybody else. And then it just left with us doing nothing for like 30 minutes. So that sort of made me laugh to myself. You know, sometimes, you know, if no one has any preferences, sometimes you're sort of caught in the middle of doing nothing, I guess. I don't know if that's true or not, but when you first talked about preferences came up in my head. And then later, as you went into your talk about the skandhas, it sort of reminds me of like, you know, occasionally, I have like generalized anxiety. And one year, it was all encompassing, all consuming, almost 24 hour anxiety. And at one point I was seeing a therapist, and, you know, I said, oh, I don't want to feel this way. And, you know, she told me like, oh, but just sit with it. You know, how long have you felt this way? Oh, you know, for months, you know. And she says, oh, has anything bad happened? I said, no, nothing's bad happened. And she says, okay, continue to sit with it. Ask yourself, what happened before? What was your trigger for the anxiety? You know, and she told me, and don't add anything extra to it. You know, she don't wish it away. Don't try to think of something else. She said, just be present, sit with it, and then ask, and then just sometimes don't even ask yourself why it is. Just sit with it for a bit, and then be aware of what's triggering it next time. And, you know, she always asked, what were you doing when this happened? You know, did something else trigger it? And, you know, to me, you know, at first that just felt so not intuitive. You just want me to sit with it? You want me to live in it and not try to fight it off? And yeah, and after a while, you know, it's not, it diminishes, you know. It's not that it's not there. It's more like, just like you said, being mindful of it. You're just like, oh yes, you know, now I'm just like, I'm feeling anxious. Okay, you know, I guess I'll sit with that for a bit. It's not the end of the world, you know. It maybe relatively it feels like the end of the world, but you know, on the grand scheme of things, it isn't. So, you know, sometimes not having preferences on where you're at, you know, not wanting something to be different than what is happening is good. Sometimes that causes pain because you want something to be different. And also when you said, you know, there's sometimes neutral isn't so bad. And I remember hearing a talk, I think it was I don't know what teacher was doing it, but it was a Dharma talk. And it was talking about how in our society now, neutral is almost the worst place you want to be. You know, it's almost like you're not going anywhere, you know. And this might have been in a book study because it sounds like some Akamoro said, you know, just not progressing, you know, because if we're not in pain and we're not happy and we're in this neutral place, sometimes we don't know how to be in the neutral place either. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on like the neutral place not being where we want to be.
No, well, the neutral place, you know, I don't know that the neutral place is where we don't want to be or where we want to be. You know, but one thing about the neutral place is that it probably doesn't lead to much growth or maturity because, you know, nothing challenges us there. So we just kind of coast in that place, which is okay. We need some coasting. So it's good that we're not under assault from unpleasant feelings, you know, too much. We don't want that. Neutral place probably is a place of, you know, coasting, but that's okay. We should coast, you know, sometimes. And then the other thing I thought about your comments was the headline for your dinner party was Bodhisattvas go hungry because they're so kind and considerate. So that's not so bad either.
Yeah, that's a nice one.
let's see. Charles, I think, was next.
What would you say, Jim, is the fundamental difference between having a preference for a certain outcome or condition and having a strong craving for a certain outcome and condition?
Well, the difference, I would say, is attachment, right? I mean, craving, you know, we I think that's the main difference. There's preference, which we probably aren't getting, you know, away from, but then there's, we, you know, adding on, Richard's therapist said, don't add on, but we do add on and we add on attachment to our preference. And then if we dwell on it, it becomes, I can't live without it. I can't live without it. And I've got to have it at whatever cost. And sometimes that's at the cost of hurting other people and, you know, all sorts of things. So I would say craving, you know, obviously was identified by the Buddha as you know, the primary source of suffering. Preference is an obstacle to liberation, but I don't think it's a primary source of suffering. It is an obstacle to liberation. And I think that's what the third ancestor is pointing at, about removing that obstacle.
Thank you.
Kenny?
I think it was Linda was up next.
Oh, Linda.
Thank you, Kenny. Well, Jim, you and I have been going to these meetings for over 10 years now. And I have to confess that I'm kind of exhausted. I'm ready for some coasting. But what struck me about the talk is you said something to the effect of maybe a lot of the trouble is with these negative reactions. And I actually, I mean, I have those issues for sure, but I suffer more. I have more suffering about really good, positive emotions because I am very greedy. I am very greedy for love and happiness and being with grandchildren and being with friends and enjoying life. I'm very greedy and I know that. And I have a hard time. I have a really hard time when things are over that have been really good and rewarding. I feel a really strong sense of loss when things like that happen. So I think the positives can be just as difficult to deal with sometimes, at least for me.
Well, yeah, definitely. In it, you know, the Buddha's definition of suffering, he not only says not getting what you want is suffering, but, you know, losing what you have that's pleasant is also suffering. I'm not quoting that quite right, but, you know, to lose what is good and rich in your life.
I'm realizing now it actually lessens the wonder of the moment that you're in. If in the back of your mind, you're worried about it ending.
Right.
Yeah. That's the catch.
It's one of many, huh? but you're wrong about 10 years of meetings, Linda. It's more like 25 years of meetings.
Yeah, you're right. Well, you started 5 or 6 years before I did, so maybe 20 for me. But you know what? I have to say this in front of everybody. I am so grateful for this experience, for working with Jim and working with Karen so much. Now Larry's on board with the Dharma Center and Dora Lee newer additions. It's, you know, it's been a work of love, even if it's exhausting.
Thank you. Kenny.
Yeah, I'm sorry that you had such strong negative feelings. I was one of the people that threw you under the bus on the tree decision. I didn't even go to the meeting. I just did it by email. But it brings up, I didn't really have strong preferences. I kind of said, man, I got to weigh the evidence and read through it, and I'll come to a decision. And you know, sort of like what Richard was saying, what if you don't really have a lot of preferences? That can be a bad thing. But then when I went there and I saw the stakes where the trees were, I was like, man, what if Jim was right? Maybe we have too many trees. But so I just, it's been a pretty conflict-laden situation. But I just want to apologize for not really being as deeply involved and not as, and anyways, I'm sorry that it was such a traumatic experience for you.
Okay, but Sangha, notice that I did not, I bring up the particular instance where this event all occurred, but in response to a question, I did bring it out. So it really wasn't my point to focus on the particular of this. That's not the point. And the point isn't to question the decision that was made or in any way denigrate how decisions are made at the Dharma Center. That wasn't the point. The point was I had some strong feelings, which Kenny is not responsible for. And the least, I had these feelings and there was a lot of causes and conditions why I had these feelings, and working with those feelings, that was the trigger to make this talk, you know, to talk about preferences and talk about working with others and talk about how we deal with this internally and externally. So thank you, Kenny. But no, you caused no harm. Let's see, Peter.
Thank you. I would just suggest that the obesity epidemic and climate change and the drug overdosing epidemic are all very much related to this topic, as feeling better than feeling worse is something where, you know, our society is fairly addicted to. And if running 60 seconds worth of distance run, as Rudyard Kipling likes to discuss in his poem, If it were so popular, a lot of us would be a lot more fit, but it's just plain uncomfortable. And so I thank you for this conversation. And lastly, on the topic of neutrality, you know, is that so valuable? I do see the merit of envisioning a sine wave, where a sine wave or a cosine wave goes from its trough up to its peak, and right in the middle at zero is the neutrality. You know, we need all of it. We can't just say, no, I don't want zero. I only want -5 and +5, or, you know, however big the amplitude is. I think it's, you know, we have to value every point in between the highest and the lowest.
Thank you for that. I mean, neutral feeling I would say, you know, it's like the ground just before you plant in a garden. You know, it's just, you know, the soil is ready. It's just there. There's nothing growing yet. But without it, nothing can grow and nothing can die, you know? So it just, you know, we do need that ground. We do need that ground. Okay, Millard. I think you're muted, Millard.
I recall from a recording of one of your root teacher, I believe when he was in Tassajara, possibly in the late 70s, going to a meeting precisely as what you did, how you described it. And he said, I'm not concerned. They always decide my preference. And I'm just wondering, well, you know, what's the trick? How does that happen?
Well, yeah, he's also told another story, my root teacher, about a time when he did attach to something very strongly at Tassajara. And he told that story on himself for a while, quite a few times. You know, I guess he felt like he caused a little bit of schism in the Sangha, you know, just a little, not a great schism or anything, but, you know, some disturbance in the force. I don't think anybody I've ever met is immune from having preferences, but it's a great gift when you can do what you say he did in that, you know, where he probably did express his preference, and then he waited to see what others did and what consensus arose, and, you know, that, you know, so I think, you know, we shouldn't be wallflowers. We should express our preferences, and we should let go of our preferences. And that's, and that, finding that balance, you know, it, there's no formula for that. There absolutely is no formula. We're, you know, and the Dharma Center is a great place for, you know, exploring this, as some of you know, because there's a lot of different, you know, what did it say? All those who have these feelings and these minds, you know, well, there's all those there at the Dharma Center and in our Sangha who have these feelings and these minds, and they are as they are, and we get to work with all of it. And
if, if I experience a preference, I can consider how did it arise? All my preferences are like borrowed. You know, someone once asked me, or asked the group of us, do you want what others want? And I just instinctively said, well, yeah.
That's a great insight, that all of our preferences are borrowed, and also our habits of clinging to preferences are borrowed from you know, ancient karma.
Ancient twisted, right?
Ancient karma. But that's what these minds and these feelings are made of. So that's what the clay we have to work with. Well, I don't see any more hands, and we come to our ending hour. So thank you very much. I'm so looking forward to, I feel the time of actually practicing together in person is coming closer and closer. And I just let you know, we're talking about that quite a bit now. And stay tuned.